Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. There's no set schedule, it's just whenever I finish a science fiction book, or maybe not a science fiction book, I do the review and stick it up here on the feed for everyone to download and listen to. Joining me today is Juliana. Say hello, Juliana.
Hello, everyone.
And it's happening. I'm going to talk about Moby Dick. I've been threatening to for the last five or six episodes as I've been reading this book in the background.
Yes.
And
but you also said you wouldn't.
Well, the thing is, a year and a half ago, whenever it was, I have a clear memory of me saying, I'm never going to read Moby Dick.
Yep.
And the reason is because there's quite a few things where I'm like, oh, it's probably better if I don't, because I enjoy that other people are making references about something.
Yeah.
And if it's too much of an easy reference, it's sort of like, you know, like this science fiction book that I read, I can't remember what it was called, but I only read it because it was narrated by an AI. Let me bring up the episode list here as well.
So it had other reason for you to read it than the actual book itself.
Yeah. So it was, what was it called? Infinity Gate. No, that wasn't it. Which one was the one?
I don't know. It was recently.
Oh, yeah. I didn't.
You haven't updated it yet.
No, I did. It's because Artifact by Joshua James. No, because I listed it. The episode was called Virtual Voice Narration in 2024.
Okay.
So a book which I cared about so little, the only reason I read it was because it was a virtual voice and I wanted to have a different conversation about that.
Yeah.
Even that book, there's some stuff set in like a watery world.
Okay.
And they're like, oh, and this submarine is called Moby Dick. And this is, you know, I'm like, why is it like... No author can resist the attraction of referencing Moby Dick and Ahab and Ishmael and all of these different kind of things in that book.
Okay.
Nobody can get away with it. So,
but isn't that Bible stuff?
It is some Bible stuff, which I'll get onto later on in this podcast.
Okay.
So anyway, but it gets to the point where I'm like, I'm just looking for something to read and it comes up in the library. I was like, oh, let's just test it out, see what it's going here.
Right.
And it took me a while to get through. I could look at the whatever it is. I started it in January, finish it in March. Okay, so it's quite
pretty chunky.
It's quite a
is
big
it,
thing.
Is it chunky? Is it long book or is it just
it is a long
heavy?
Book. Let me bring up the Audible page. I got it from the library app for free, but there is actually a version right here. The same version. It's got by the same narrator.
Yeah.
23 hours and 52 minutes. So pretty I spent 24 hours of my life listening to this. In fact, I spent a lot more than listening to this because I would often listen to it and fall asleep and then skip back to the same place. So there's some bits which I listen to over and over again, but not a bad book to fall asleep to. Really not a bad book to fall asleep to.
Okay. The narration was good?
Narration, no issues about the narration at all.
Okay, cool.
So I don't really know. I mean, I made quite a few notes the other day. So I listened to the whole thing. I just want to. Someone actually messaged. They said Thea on Goodreads says, if you're going to review it on the SFBRP, how about a comment on what makes you persist with books? I gave up on Moby Dick, but read War and Peace twice. Okay, let me take War and Peace.
Okay,
I read half of War and Peace, and
I think I started that too.
And I got halfway through, and I got an internet connection at home in my bedroom, and suddenly reading War and Peace wasn't the most important thing. I was reading it. Like, there was no reason I wouldn't have finished it if I hadn't have literally got an internet connection. This was like in 2001 or something like that at home.
I started reading that book too, and I found that this is one of those books that you have to read it in one go.
Yeah, you can't stop.
You can't stop because otherwise you get utterly
confused.
It's
a soap opera. It's like coming through halfway through a soap opera. Anyway, so a comment on what makes you persist with books. In this case, in most cases, I don't persist with books. I just quit. Like, I've got no problem. Life is short.
Yeah.
My yearly theme this year is the year of giving up. In other words, just give up on stuff or moving on from stuff. Maybe that's the better theme of my year is moving on. So just move on. Just life is short. Move on.
This is very impressive to me.
Why?
Because before I'm kind of before I met you, I never, that thought never even occurred to me.
That you could start reading a book and not finish it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It feels like I'm, you know, not giving it honor.
It deserves nothing of your time. No author deserves your time and attention. Let's make the very clear.
Yeah.
So I don't persist with books. I give up on books all the time.
Yeah.
Normally I give up them pretty early. But in this case, I didn't want to give up. And I said I might give up because I got halfway through and I'm like, this book isn't doing it for me.
Mm.
But then I kind of had a change of mind I went in with a different mindset.
Okay.
And judged it by different terms. Now, this book, let me just quickly look up here on the Wikipedia page. It's from 1851. Now, there's very few novels which I've reviewed which are like earlier than that. Like, when was Jules Verne? You know, I've read like those kind of things. That's sort of like mid
1880s.
1860, 1870, 1880, you know.
So who wrote this?
Herman Melville. Herman Melville is an American author.
Yeah.
And for a bit of context, he wrote it. It was not a success. He only sold a few hundred in the first year.
Okay.
A few thousand in total.
Yeah.
There was a warehouse fire and that destroyed the rest. He never made his money back. He died in obscurity. And it was only like 50, 60 years later, like 1920s, 19, whatever it is, yeah. when this book was rediscovered and people then consider it a classic. At the time, a complete failure.
Okay.
And I can totally see why.
Good
now,
to know.
Again, so here's the thing. When I'm reading these books, I have to suddenly go, right, actually, what is it that I'm reading? And I realized what I have to consider this is, like Jules Verne said that he was writing not science fiction, but scientific fiction.
Yeah.
In other words, people are going on an adventure, but actually what I want to do is I've been on adventures and I've read lots of things in books. So I just want to frame the stuff that I've read in books and seen around the world as in an adventure story. So you can get all the knowledge from the scientific knowledge.
Yeah.
But, you know, all the stuff that's under the sea, we can do it with Captain Nemo.
Yeah.
Everything that happens under the earth, we do it with, you know, whatever those guys are called. You know, the different islands. So once you go like, all right, so like science fiction hadn't been invented yet. And there isn't anything science fictional in Moby Dick at all, just to be really clear.
Yeah.
It's not science fiction.
It's fiction.
It's not fantasy. It's just a story, you know, an adventure story in some ways. But a lot of it is like, all right, and now I read this in a book and now I'm going to tell you about it.
Okay. So the author is telling a story that they read via another character.
Not even that. And I'll get on to that. So let me just bring up my notes here, because I did actually make some notes of so here we go. I listened to the whole thing. And in the end, I just want to say the writing is very, very good.
Okay.
And so I totally understand why all these critics and these, you know, like not like just book reviewers, I'm talking about the people who do critical analysis and dive deep into the themes and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I totally understand why this book is attractive, because the writing is really good.
Okay.
Herman Melville creates his own language, which isn't quite English, and isn't using English rules. And when you get into the flow of it, he's just like saying random words, and you're like, that's not even a word. But in the flow of the writing, it makes sense, and the imagery is really good. Like the imagery, the metaphors that, like I say, the use of language of like, you know, I can't even think of anything off the top of my head, but like at one point, you know, it spiralizes down, and you're like, what does spiralizing mean? You know, and there's all these different kind of words where he just like turns nouns into verbs and verbs into nouns, like just, you know, adjectives becomes, you know, everything just gets switched around. And the language is so fun and so fantastic that's really the only thing that carries you through the book.
Okay.
But it doesn't carry everybody through the book, because if it's the language isn't clicking with you,
yeah.
Actually, what's underneath the language is at some point a very bad story.
Bad as in the storytelling is bad, or the story?
Well, let me get
bad.
Into this. So there, again, there's just so much good writing. It tricks people into thinking that below the surface is something worth analyzing critically,
right.
And diving deep into the themes of it.
Okay.
And the story and the meaning of this character and the meaning of that. And the, what does this, you know, to ponder the theme. And because I was looking at like some other things, you know, because I wanted to see what the chapter outlines were. Like, which chapter did this happen, if you know what I mean? So
yeah.
I started looking. There's lots of study guides about it.
Yeah.
And it's sort of like, oh, yeah, and this introduces this character, which is meaningful because of this. And it's, you know, and this thing is talked about here, which references this. And he's now starting to delve into the deeper theme of this and that. And I'm like, no, he isn't. It's just, like, under the surface of the really good writing is just a bad novel. Like, actually, what this is a bad novel with bad pacing, a not very interesting plot, underdeveloped characters, and that's just one third of the novel is the bad novel, underdeveloped characters, and bad pacing of the plot. Okay,
mm-hmm.
That's one thing. Another thing that it is a whaling manual or a guide to the whaling industry.
Okay.
About, I wouldn't say a third of it, but like the other novel that's in, or the other bit of writing, and that's kind of like the scientific literature, sort of like,
right.
I will now expound upon the internal dimensions of a sperm whale,
right.
And now I'll talk about how a harpoon works,
yeah.
And here's how a rope works, and here's a boat, yeah.
So it's about like the info dumping time. Like he knew something about whaling. Yeah. Why? I don't know.
And he obviously read books, and you can literally see like, oh, now he's just read a book and now he's putting stuff
in this
book.
Here's my knowledge.
Yeah, yeah.
From our perspective now, might be culturally interesting because
you can
read about how things were.
A lot of it, like a lot of the scientific stuff is like super out of date. And also it's very, in a way, again, this is just one of the dated things. It always talks about like the dimensions of the whale and the harpooning. And what I'd actually want to know about, which is like the emotions of the whale and the thoughts of the whale, because it's obviously intelligent. You know, the whale, Moby Dick and these other whales are obviously have intelligence. Mm. But that's only kind of referenced. There's never a chapter where it goes, well, let's examine, are whales conscious? Because Herman Melville just isn't interested in that. It's like back then, that isn't it. But the other third of the book is all about the real thematic stuff. So he goes, right, all right, let's talk about a white whale. White, what does white mean? Well, in this language, it means this. And in this history, it means this. And white comes up in the Odyssey here. And, you know, in these histories here. And the Romans thought about this. And, the Mesopotamians here. And the Egyptians thought about white here. But then in the Vikings are thinking about white. And this thing is white. And this thing is meaningful because it's white. And this is like a 25-minute chapter in the audiobook. He just does a deep dive into white things in mythology.
Right.
And then there'll be another chapter which is sort of like, all right, now let's talk about Jonah. Jonah this, Jonah Jidlia, something like the can. How would Jonah have worked? Oh, and it wasn't a whale, it was a fish, and they think I'd similar, blah, 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 this kind of stuff. And then like, right, now let's talk about morality and something, something. And so another third of the book are these, and none of these are connected in a way. I mean, they are connected, but in a way which I'll just get to, is that like it's just somebody expounding on, you know, metaphysics and philosophy and history from a, you know, religious point of view, and just layers and layers of biblical references just all the way through, like in these chapters.
Okay.
And these aren't mixed together. They come in blocks. Here's a bit of plot. Okay, now let's have some whaling information. Now let's have some, literature and philosophy. And now let's have a bit more whaling. And now let's have a bit more plot. Now let's have... And there's literally like three chapters in a row where it'll just be like, okay, don't worry about whaling. Don't worry about story. Let's just talk about, you know, this other thing in the Bible or Shakespeare. And, you know, if I keep bringing this stuff up, it means, but none of these are tied together in the novel. Because novels hadn't really been invented yet in the same way that we read a novel now.
Yes.
Okay. Now, you wouldn't just put, here's three, four chapters in a row of info dumping. Mm. You would have two characters learning something, or you'd have action, and that, like, how to tie a harpoon off wouldn't just be told to you by the, like, the authorial voice. Mm-hmm. It would be explained in action or character or in dialogue or in conversation.
Oh, so I see that correctly. The info dumping of the information about the whaling and the color white and stuff, that isn't even a character in the book.
No.
Narrating, saying
it. Very important.
So it is the author from like the omnipotent writing perspective. Yeah. He is writing, this is how that works. And doesn't explain, okay, how is this...
Yeah,
I
made a note here. Someone, and this was because I was thinking how bad this was, like that the character who's writing the book is a different character than the character that's in the book. Mm-hmm. Like the narrator starts saying, call me Ishmael. And and then I read this note which said something like, there's two characters of Ishmael. There's the young Ishmael who's his first ever time on a whaling ship. You know, he's been on other ships. He's been in the merchant navy or whatever. And now he's on the whaling ship for the first time. And then there's the much older, much more experienced Ishmael who's writing this text. And I'm thinking, or a badly written novel. You can think about what the thematic aspects of this novel is, of sort of like, oh, which character of Ishmael is talking now? It's like, no, it's literally an author whose novel got away from him and wanted to put this stuff in and isn't very good at putting action and character into the novel and the information that he wants to put into the novel through the eyes of the characters in the novel, like Jules Verne in, you know, Journey to the Center of the Earth, it was kind of annoying that a lot of it was sort of like, and we walked through here and there was lots of walking, but it was all about the characters noticing things and the main character going, no, I think this is how it's going to work. I think this is how geology works. And it's the characters themselves, like the meaning of if you can get to the center of the earth meant something to one of the characters in the book.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Okay, I still didn't quite understand. Now, you said that this is the, that was an interpretation that you said?
Somebody said, like, okay. In one of these study guides, they say, oh, now, like, which of the characters of Ishmael? And I'm like, you mean the character that's in the book or Herman Melville's authorial voice, which dominates 90% of the book?
Right, but it isn't like a story of, like, let me sit down and write you the story of my youth when I went onto a boat.
No, all of that's missing. Okay. All of that's missing. That's what I'm saying is now we would expect some kind of framing story.
Yeah.
Or like any, literally, if there was anything that connected back Ishmael as he is in the main stretch of this book, which is when they're sailing from Nantucket to, you know, the South China Sea or whatever it is like that. If there was literally anything at all, which all of the text that's happening throughout this, like 75% of the novel of when that's happening, if anything about the novel was tied back to the character of Ishmael for literally 75% of the way through the book, I would actually think, oh, yeah, maybe this is the same character. Okay. But it isn't.
Okay.
It just isn't. There's one line at the start that says, call me Ishmael, and a fun bit, which I'll talk about in the beginning at the start of the book. And the epilogue of the book, which said, oh, and all of that happened, and I survived because I was on this boat. I was on this other little boat over here, and somebody came by and picked me up.
Okay.
And you're like, and then that's the end of the book. And I'm like, oh, right. So the character of Ishmael in the book learned nothing, had no opinions on anything, and nothing that's said within this book is reflected back through time from when this book, like if it was written by the character in the book later in the first person, like it's just missing. And so what happens is, and I'm going to get into a bit more of the story in a second and how this is expressed, is that what you have here is amazing writing. And let me just say, it's really fun. Like the reading part is fun, but all of the rest of it, what's under there to be analyzed by these critics who go, oh, well, what about this? And what about that? And what about this? And what does this mean? And what does that mean?
Mm.
I think it's honestly not worth thinking about, because actually at the root of it is a failed novel, which wasn't good enough in its time and wasn't good enough like at the time to do that.
Okay.
And only 50 years later, when a lot of the references go by and people's expectations change, you go, oh, this has to be really good. Why was this not discovered at the time? It's like, no, it was discovered. Everyone said the writing was good and everyone thought the story was shit.
Yeah.
And it turns out the story is shit.
But this book was published as a book, because some of these, you know, like completed novel stuff, they were published as installment in article in magazines.
No, it wasn't
articles.
This.
It was a full written book.
And here's the thing, looking at the Wikipedia page about it, he lost control of the novel in the way that he was writing the start. He was getting to the end. The first two thirds of the novel had already been sent to the printers by the time he finished it.
Okay.
And only later was all like, oh, I'm going to do some edits and going back through. So it was only when he got the first proof when he was having to do edits, so he couldn't do large scale edits. Mm. And you're like, oh, right. It's just a massive 24 hours worth of audiobook brain fart. That's right. It. So when you're like, what's the connection here? It's sort of like, well, it's just somebody like doing not automatic writing or whatever, just like just blah, 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 it's just more shit. And he throws in everything that's needed to make it feel epic by referencing the Bible, by referencing Shakespeare, by referencing Milton, by referencing all of these other great works.
Yeah.
And it's fun to recognize all of those. But there's nothing beneath that except what went on inside a guy's brain.
Right.
Like, there isn't a bigger structure to it.
Funny enough, the first thing that comes to my mind is, you know, where you just said it is representative of what goes in this guy's brain. It feels like what I hear about people currently explaining how their ADHD brain works, how they have this this total concentration on a topic, and then they just tell you everything they know about this.
Yes, like, again, I don't want to analyze, psychoanalyze someone, but it's like people going, "Oh, what's going on in this AI? What's going on inside?" No, anything that's happening on the inside of a person's head, you can. The only thing that you can like properly talk about is what's expressed on the outside of their brain.
Yeah, and this is this novel,
and this novel is just the expression of someone who's just a massive brain fart all the way through. But it's so good, like there's so much there, like if this, and I don't understand why people go, oh, if you just skip over all the chapters which aren't story, you're like, well, there's nothing there, it's just a disappointing story with flat characters.
I immediately thought that when you said, oh, it's these chapters of the info dump, and I thought, oh, that's really handy if you actually read it as a paper book or as an ebook where you can just skip the pages.
So I want to get into more details, but just keep in mind that my criticism isn't with the novel.
Yeah.
I do have criticism of the novel, but it's one of those things where I'm just sort of like, there isn't anything underneath any of this except very obvious biblical references and very obvious like irony taken straight from Shakespeare and this kind of thing. Like it's right there on the surface. But because someone has put so many references into the Bible and other literature, it makes you think that there must be something more underneath it.
Mm.
But actually, the Bible itself is just a mismatch of things. It's sort of like, here's the story of Jesus. No, here's the story of Jesus. No, here's the story of Jesus. No, here's the story of Jesus. And you're like, ah, but what does religion mean when Jesus can be four different things? It's like, no, it's just like four different people wrote four books. Like, the meanings between them are now happening in your head.
Yes.
Like, there isn't even a single author where that's happening, if you know what I mean.
So basically, he's using all the different topics and all the different symbols and metaphors and stuff to help himself.
Look, here's the thing. I'm not knocking it.
Letting the reader do the work.
But the thing is, the work that the reader has to do, there isn't a definitive way of saying, oh, no, actually, this is what it means. Now, to take it in a different direction, I just looked here. I wasn't going to mention this, but this inspires me to bring this up. Moby Dick, listeners who picked this also picked, you know, and there's Homer and Paradise Lost, but there's also the Chronicles of Narnia. Now, if you read the Chronicles of Narnia, there is no doubt at all that it's just full of biblical references, you know.
Okay.
It's all there.
Right.
Like, you know what's going on there.
And if you know.
But even if you don't know, like, it's kind of like beaten over the head with you. But then, because we know what C.S. Lewis was wanting to do with that, you know, we got letters about him, you know, and these like, all these correspondence between him and Tolkien, and these, you know, we know what these authors were thinking and we know what the authors were doing.
Yeah.
So when you think, ah, what is the bigger thing going on underneath Tolkien? You're like, there are things going on underneath, you know, the Chronicles of Narnia, and there is stuff going on underneath Tolkien, and it is knowable, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
But with Moby Dick, it isn't knowable because we've just got a few letters from people like between him and stuff, and there isn't anything there. It's just someone who goes, well, if I just put enough references to the Bible in, it'll feel epic. Yeah. And I'm like, yes. This is what authors do.
Yes.
If you read my series of novels, which is my Minding Tomorrow, which is four novels, there is a substratum of there where the character names are reflecting of biblical names, but it's not just sort of like, I will be Ishmael and you will be Elijah. You know, like there's other stuff going on there.
Mm.
And there is, you know, and I'm just... It's like a joke. It's sort of like, oh, I could just call this character Nicholas because I know it's going to be, you know, like, or whatever is going to be. And this is going to be Lilith and this is going to be Daniel. And there's going to be some other things in there, which doesn't have to mean anything to anything beyond me.
Yeah.
And the same way that C.S. Lewis can write The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe and people can read it and not understand that it's like an allegory of Jesus and the Bible or whatever.
Right.
And there's nothing, again, I'm not saying one's failed or not failed, but just by cramming in lots of references, it doesn't mean that there's anything below it.
And also we kind of know that this, the author, Melville, he obviously, I don't know the whole story about how this book came to happen, but he obviously wrote something and then it was given to the publisher and then he was like obviously under time pressure to just hand in something.
He'd already been paid for it. He had to get it in.
Yeah, so there was massive amount of pressure. So what do you do in massive amount of pressure just, and you have
just,
to like...
Just write in as many biblical references. So like at the end, they're like, oh, and then the you know, and then this disciple said, no, I don't believe. And this other disciple said, I will. And this, and then there was a boat. And then there was there was the cock crowed once and the cock crowed twice. And then the cock crowed three times. And then they're like, oh, the dramatic irony. And I'm like, I mean, that's not what Melville is saying, but that's me as somebody who knows the Bible pretty well. That's all I'm reading there. I'm like, yes. I'm like, yeah, I get it. You're putting in lots of references to the crucifixion and this character's going to die. But it, in the end, underneath that, there isn't anything to say that it meet. Like, there's nothing in the text that I'm picking up to say that it means anything. And again, all I did was listen to it as an audio. But maybe if I went through line by line, I could pick out more things. Right. But like, oh my goodness, just so many references to religion and to Shakespeare and to, you know, Christianity and whatever.
Now I have a big question to you.
Oh yeah, big question.
So you decided to read this book.
Yeah.
Also because you wanted to know, like, you know that lots of people
put... It's just a challenge.
...put this book as a reference in their books.
Yeah. That's
so my question now is, do you now see, is there like a, do you think you see what the other authors who reference Moby Dick in their books, what they try to say?
Nothing. Again, it's all they're doing is doing the same thing as Melville did,
right,
which
exactly.
is the same thing as all these critics do and all these other writers are doing. It's just a game. Like, there isn't anything, like I say, if there is something below the surface, it has to be expressed not just in putting references to things. You know what I mean? Like, if all you're doing is making a reference to something and then moving on and your story doesn't actually impact your story at all,
right?
It doesn't mean that's not what it. I don't know, it's different to say. Like when I was, again, coming back to, you know, the Piranesi and stuff like that, I'm getting more out of Piranesi because I've read the Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe and the, you know, the Sorcerer's Apprentice and stuff.
Yeah.
And you're over there struggling to get anything out of Piranesi. And I'm like, this is like one of the best books, even though it wasn't one of the best books. But I, you know, listened to it twice in a row.
Yeah.
Because the thematic, the theme is being brought out in the character and in the references.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
Like, a good novel has to, for me, what makes a great novel, rather than just a novel or a good novel, is the interplay between the character is theme, action is theme, setting is theme, and theme informs, like, then goes back into all of those things, you know?
Right.
And the best of the novels is sort of like there is a core idea, or there's a number of, like, if the book is big enough, you can have a large number of ideas and core ideas.
Yeah.
And the book reflects what there is. And it can be like as in a popcorn book, it can be whatever, you know, like Peter F. Hamilton, whoa, like that. But you can, each one of the novels, you're like, okay, there's a core to this, which is what this book is about.
Yes. So any sort of reference is supporting that what's happening in the book,
and
unlike the book is using the references relying on the references.
Yeah, it's relying on the references
to get the story
great
going.
If your job is, I'm a professor of English at a university in America and I want to find a great American book, this is fantastic for that, because there's just so much brain fart in there that it's, you're gonna find anything that you want, you're gonna find in there.
Yeah.
But there's nothing that actually raises this novel above,
apart from the language.
The language is great, but I think that's what I'm saying. The language tricks people into thinking that there's more to this than what is actually three different separate things: the narrative, the wailing manual, and your thematic talking.
Yeah.
But they're only in the last four or five chapters do they actually come together. And I'm like, oh, it's all worth it for these last four chapters. But tell you something, it's not all worth it for those last four chapters.
Okay. But coming back to the question of the listener.
I'm the listener.
No. What you said, somebody sent you a question.
Oh, right, yeah. Thea said, if you're going to review it on the SFBRP, how about a comment on what make you persist with books?
Yes. So... with this book in particular, you halfway through the book, you said you had a change of perspective or a change of how you perceive the book that made you
Let me continue, get onto it. Shall I tell you about my reading experience up to that point?
Please.
Okay, this book starts really good.
Mm.
Okay, and I started reading it, and it's about Ishmael, and he's a young guy, maybe in his 20s. He'd been at sea before, and he wants to join up. He's saying, oh, I'm going to change careers. I'm going to go out on a whaling ship because I'm really interested in going out on a whaling ship.
Okay, what's his career before then?
Oh, he was in the Merchant Navy. So he'd been on the ship. He'd been on a few trips.
Okay.
He'd sailed around, weirdly, quite like Herman Melville, but whatever.
Oh,
so, yeah. It's sort of like author insert, whatever.
Right.
So he's in, like, somewhere in Boston, New England somewhere.
Yeah.
New Bedford? Something like that. Anyway, he's in a place, not New Bedford, because that's where I just watched a little video of it.
Yeah.
But he's in this one place, and he's sort of like, all right, I'm going to go, and we need to get a boat over to this other place. And he goes, and it's sort of like, he needs to stay in a hotel. So he goes in, and there's this really fun, what I can only call is a romance, like the start of a romance novel, where there's this meet-cute between him and this savage called Queequeg. And they end up in bed together because there's sort of like some misunderstanding. Oh, you're going to have to do this. And he's a savage from some Polynesian islands or some South Pacific islands. And he sleeps with his harpoon in his bed. But they end up in bed together, and they wake up, and they're kind of like hugging each other in the bed and stuff. And then they get up and they explore town and they have some fun. And then I'm like, hey, this is really fun. It's sort of like Ishmael and Queequeg meet cute, and what's going to happen? And they're like, I'm going to go to sea. I'm going to go to sea as well. Oh, we should be on the same ship together. Yes, let's sign up to the same ship. So they get back into bed together that night, and it's all like homoerotic.
Really?
And
that's interesting.
And it's fun
for the time.
It's personal. It's Queequeg is really fun. Ishmael is fun, and you're going around, and they go to this ceremony, and they meet the innkeeper, and then they go across to what's it called? The island. I don't know what the island is called.
I don't know either.
It's called
Island. I don't know.
Nantucket. So they get across to Nantucket, which is where the center of whaling is and stuff. And they have some more adventures, and they get to the ship. Oh, we're going to go on that ship. I'm going to sign up in the ship. And there's this talk about, well, Queequeg's going to get paid a lot more money than I am. And it's sort of like, yeah, of course, because you're just like there to row the boat, and he's there as the spear thrower, you know.
Right.
And then they meet some different people, and it's all really good fun. And this is like the first 20 chapters of the novel.
Right.
And I'm like, hey, I can totally understand why this is considered one of the great novels.
Okay.
Because it's all good.
Right. It's fun.
It's fun.
However, I now need to interrupt here because you just used a word which I guess is straight from the novel.
What's that?
To call a person a savage.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. He's a savage. Like, again,
savage.
That's what I'm trying to say is, I'm trying to put, like, get across my reading experience of this. Everyone is a black. Everyone is a savage. Everyone is like, because it's from because the whaling ships go like all around all the oceans. So
right.
You get like lots of Native Americans, lots of Polynesians. You get people, some whalers from the UK, some whalers from, you know, whatever.
Right.
The cook is black, and the cabin boy is black, and you know there's a freed slave here. You know, it's a diverse set of characters.
Right.
Again, you're not meeting them all at the start, but you're meeting, you know, you meet some of them here as well.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, don't get too caught up on the language that I'm using, because I'm just saying like the stuff, what my reading experience was in the book.
Right.
Queequeg, yeah, he's covered in tattoos, and he's the son of the king of an island in, you know, Hawaii or Polynesia. I can't even remember where it is.
Okay.
Probably a fake island just made up for the book.
Yes.
I don't know. And so you're getting to know Ishmael, you're getting to know Queequeg, and everything is told via what's happening and who they're meeting and what they're doing and decisions that they're making and things that they're learning.
Yeah.
That Ishmael is learning and that Queequeg is learning and the people that they're meeting along the way.
Okay.
Until they get onto the boat.
And so they get on the same boat.
They get onto the same boat.
Yeah.
And then they set off. And this is 20 chapters in,
mm-hmm.
25 chapters in. There's 130 something chapters in the book.
Okay.
And the relationship between Queequeg and Ishmael is never mentioned again.
Oh, that's a pity.
And I'm like, I thought this was going to be a romance. I thought this was going to be like,
or something.
Fun. I thought there was going to be literally anything in here. Like anything in, like, I expected this to see through this story, because spoilers, I know that the ship's going down at the end. I know that the white whale, Moby Dick, is going to destroy the ship that they're on.
Yeah.
And I'm probably one of these guys, Ishmael has to survive to write the story. So what's he going to think when Queequeg gets taken out by the whale?
Hmm.
Later on, Queequeg gets ill and might be dying. We never get to know Ishmael's thoughts of this. I'm like, I thought you guys were best buddies or lovers or whatever. Yeah. Like, the reason why you signed up on the ship together is because, like, you'd ended up in bed together and we're, like, all smiling and googly eyes at each other. And, like, and again, maybe this is me reading into it, but, like, the start of the book made me think, like, the first 25 chapters made me think that an important part of the book, the important part of the novel was going to be the relationship between Ishmael and Queequeg. And guess what?
It's not.
It's not.
Okay.
It literally doesn't come up again.
Oh, that's a pity.
It doesn't come up again.
Good start, but then...
Do you understand what I'm saying? Suddenly disappointed. I'm like, but what about this other... Okay, so next thing that happens. The ship set off and suddenly the info dumping starts in earnest. Mm. Up until now, everything new that we've seen as a reader as sort of listening to the audiobook or whatever, everything I've been told... has been through the eyes of someone who is new to whaling.
Yeah.
Like, so we don't need to learn all the nautical terms, but anything that's unique to whaling, Ishmael is finding out for the first time.
Yeah.
As soon as the ship sets off, that voice, which is Ishmael on an adventure, disappears, and instead it's just Herman Melville's voice of someone who's read a lot of books and has very strong opinions about whaling.
Okay.
Like, oh, I think we should do this, and I think the person with the spear shouldn't be the one who's rowing, because the more he rows, the more tired out he is, and he should put all his strength in. I'm like, yes, Herman Melville, I see now that you have a very strong opinion about whaling, but that is your opinion. When did Ishmael learn this?
Yeah, did it have like consequences? Nope. Like they didn't get the fish because the person with the thing was rowing?
All of suddenly this info dumping is from the point of view of like years, decades later, Ishmael, who is now already an expert and is the most knowledgeable person and is now just reading out a textbook to you that he's written.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm like, oh, up until the ship set off, everything was good storytelling and incidental knowledge and learning. And as soon as we get on, we're just told stuff from a different point of view. Ishmael disappears from the story.
Okay.
For the next 75 chapters, Ishmael doesn't exist in the story.
Okay.
The character who I, you know, got to know at the start.
Yeah, who was telling a story.
He doesn't exist in the story.
Okay, so does it jump from things and to other things?
Yeah, things happen. Mostly they meet up with other ships along the way and someone says, hey, have you seen the white whale? And they say no, or yes, it took my arm, or no, I've not seen it. Oh, the white whale doesn't exist, it's just a myth or whatever.
And then
like
it's
that.
Like intercepted with, it's white and let's talk about color white now. Okay.
Next thing that I was expecting...
Yeah.
Is Ahab, Captain Ahab, one of these, you know, great characters, epic characters, you know, all time, one of the most famous characters in literature is Ahab.
Mm-hmm.
What do you know? Tell me everything that you know about Captain Ahab.
Nothing.
Oh, maybe I'm not asking the wrong person. Okay, Captain Ahab, he's obsessed with the white whale.
Oh,
it's his mission to track down Moby Dick.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It becomes his story.
He wants to kill him because Moby Dick did something.
Yeah, yeah.
In
took
the
his
past.
Arm.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay.
Bit of his leg.
Yeah, yeah.
So he's got one arm
now
and one
I
leg
remember.
Or whatever.
Yes. Yeah.
And and he wants
revenge.
So it's all about revenge. All about revenge onto Moby Dick.
Mm.
And I'm like, great. One of the all-time great literary figures who's obsessed with something.
Yeah.
You know? And this is why anyone who turns up in a book that's called Ahab, I'm like, all right, okay.
Revenge.
What is white whale, if you know what I mean? Oh, yeah. who's the guy who's going to be irrational and put the revenge against an inanimate object or an animal above the safety of the crew and all that? Like, what kind of, like, what's all these, every time I've seen reference, now let's get to the heart of who Ahab
the
is.
Unhealthy obsession.
Unhealthy obsession. Mm. Ahab, it might as well mean unhealthy obsession, which is going to destroy the thing. You, the people around you and the thing that you're obsessed with. Okay. So what is at the heart of this? And what happens is it's all done in one conversation. In one info dump. And I was like, oh, I thought this was going to be a growing obsession. Like, they're going to sail out to sea. And we're going to be like, what's Ahab upset with? Nobody really knows. And through conversations, he's going to drop the whale. Mm. And then you go, well, there's some whales over here. Why aren't we going to the normal whaling spot? And sort of like, oh, it's not known. And who are these mysterious figures? Oh, it's like another crew who are going to follow his, you know. Like, there's all of these ways. All of the things that I thought was going to go on in this novel, which is going to develop Captain Ahab over the course of the next 75 chapters to show how obsessed he really is.
Yeah.
And how dangerous it is, and how he somehow cons everyone around him to follow him into danger for a personal, you know, some kind of personal way of, like...
vendetta.
Like his vendetta. Yeah, yeah. And, like, yeah. It's going to be this creeping thing that is spread throughout this whole novel, yeah. And all of the thematic stuff that people always talk about, it's going to be revealed. And as you can tell by how I'm setting this up in my head, the most disappointing part of this novel was the scene where Captain Ahab gets everyone around and sort of like, he's like, all right, who here knows the white whale? And some crewmen are like, oh, I know the white whale. It's called Moby Dick. That's right, Moby Dick. Right. It took my leg. It took my arm. I'm very angry with it. I'm obsessed. And that's the reason why I'm very, very angry. I am very, very angry at Moby Dick. So what we're going to do on this voyage is sail after Moby Dick and try and kill Moby Dick. And because it is a... And I'm like, oh, you're just spelling... like. And I'm like, in one chapter... There's literally the scene where we're like, and now let's lay out all of the main character points of this main character who is right now in the book, Ahab. He's moody and distant for a while, then gets out and literally gives a PowerPoint presentation about what his character is and how upset he is with it. And they didn't even need to tell the story because he's sort of like, who knows this? And the other characters, like these like unnamed crewmen, are like, yeah, I know Moby Dick. Yeah, he's a dangerous one, isn't he? Yeah, right, great. I was like, so we don't even get to see in his words, like, or we don't see the whale. And I always thought there was the whale. We'd meet the whale at the beginning and it would do something and then we'd have to chase the whale down. It's like, no, the whale's always out there.
Or even like in my mind how the stories would be told through, like, oh, and then the rowers, the people rowing the boat got together in the evening and then told them each other's stories, how, you know, things happened, or like hearsay stories of how Ahab lost his legs or whatever.
It's literally like, I made a note, first mention of Moby Dick. It's mentioned, the others, we already know the whale, we know the whole story. So the story of Moby Dick and who Moby Dick is known by all of the crew members already.
Okay.
And we're just told what it is. And then Ahab says, I want revenge. And Starbuck, who's the first officer, says, I think it's dangerous for us just to follow along in your revenge. And I'm like, oh, so even like the secondary characters, it's just spelled out. Here is the person who wants revenge. This person says, I think it's dangerous for us to follow along and just follow you into your revenge. And I'm like, yeah, it's one meeting. It's like one chapter, like chapter 32 or whatever it is, where it's a meeting which just lays out everything we need to know about the story and about the motivations of the main characters. And okay. Ishmael doesn't reflect on it at all. Queequeg's off to the side. We don't know anything about him. And there's like three characters. There's Starbuck. There's whatever the other officer is called. I can't even remember. And Ahab. And we're just told. And then the rest of the book is interspersed between info dump chapters and thematic chapters and religious chapters is... they have a meeting between two ships and they're like, what do you think? Oh, I think this. Ahab's sort of like, I'm very angry at the ship. And he's just a dick and a bastard all the way through to every single other person. And I'm like, why are people following? Like, how is there not a mutiny? Like, he's disobeying the orders of the ship owners. They've told him to come back with oil and he's sort of like, ah, I don't care about it. There's an oil leak on the ship. And they're like, this is our livelihood. We've got to stop and repair the oil. And Ahab's like, I don't care about the oil. Go and get Moby Dick. And I'm like, all of the sailors,
what?
They don't, how is they,
and I'm why like, why are they sacrificing themselves?
And I'm like, it's just a shit novel, a very well written shit novel. Like, the characters don't make sense, the ideas, the story, the plot, the pacing is all really shit. It's like bad. It's like really bad. Like, we get to chapter 95 or 100 or something. I made a note here. Chapter 97. Oh, no, where is it saying? Oh, yeah. Sorry. 24 hours. After 19.5 hours and sort of like, and now let's introduce you to the cook and let's introduce you to the carpenter and let's introduce you to the ironmonger. I'm like, I'm 19 hours into the book. The time that you introduce the crew members is chapter 25 when they sail away.
Yeah.
And Ishmael goes and has conversations with these people and meets sees them. What they work.
Yeah.
And we get to know them through what they do with the crew members and how and what they think about stuff. And I'm like, it's just, I mean, it's from 1851 or whatever, but it's a really bad novel. I mean, as a story, as a novel, as characters, as development, plot and pacing, it's really bad.
If 2/3 of the book already were at the publisher and he needed to write it. So of course he's then going to say, oh, what can I put in? Oh, there's other people. Let me explain that.
Yeah.
I have one other big question. Is it normal that seamen call animals that they're chasing names? Like, why does it have a name?
Moby Dick is based on a true life story. Like, Herman Melville heard a story of an actual whale called Mocha Dick.
Okay.
It was a hard to catch albino whale, and this was from the book's ending is based on the sinking of the whale ship the Essex in 1820. So there's already a story from 1820, which is about an albino white whale called Mocha Dick, which takes out a whaling ship.
Okay, so in the same way that you have like dolphins living in harbors, and then they call Dingle. What's it called?
Fungi the harbor dolphin.
Something like that. Okay, so it's people calling an animal a name, and then that gets translated into this story. Then.
Moby Dick.
Okay,
based on Mocha Dick, which sank her. So.
Okay, so just reflect this now.
Right.
So he didn't even come up with a story by himself.
No, again, I don't mind that. Like, there's no problem about taking other people's ideas and other existing stories and, like, fictionalizing them.
Yeah.
Because here's the thing. That those last 5 chapters, when it actually does all come together, is, again, that's the best bit
so
of the
book. So basically,
you
should put the first 24 chapters and the last 5 chapters together and have just a shorter book?
No, because the thing that gives it all the weight is the learning about the whaling, but it's done so badly. Like, the info dumping is so clumsy and the thematic exploration is so divorced from both the story and the info dumping that, again, at the core is 3 different writing exercises which aren't combined together well enough to make a compelling book.
I see.
But that, because there's so much in the book and because you'd be like, oh yeah, Captain Ahab, a legendary figure, it's sort of like, no, if you read what Ahab is like, there's nothing there except it's just full of stupid people as well, you know what I mean? Like, and I've talked to you before about The Godfather. It doesn't matter how well that movie is made. It's really disappointing when I watched it, because I was like, oh, these are just stupid people. Like, the characters who we're meant to think about, sort of like, oh, I know how to solve this. How do you solve it? Oh, we just shoot them in the head. I'm like, oh, I thought the offer that you couldn't refuse was, like, I thought there was going to be some subtlety. Yeah. It's like, no, we just killed the guy's horse, and then he's afraid for his life, and now he doesn't refuse it.
That's always the solution. Just go in and kill everyone.
Yeah, and it's sort of like, the line was sort of like, leave the gun. Take the cannoli, leave the gun. I always thought this was going to be, like, an amazing moment, because I'd heard the reference. Like, I'd heard the quote so many times.
Yeah.
And then you're like... and you're like, oh, it's just stupid, violent, dumb people being stupid and violent to other people.
Yeah.
And the only solution is just kill everything until
your life is also ruined.
And this novel is trying to make out whaling to be something noble. But it gets to the point, there's only so many chapters I can read about how to carve the brains out of a whale's head. And I'm like, I kind of don't like people who kill whales. And now this is our main character. And he's sort of like, and this is the best way. And then we had this whale strapped to the side. And I'm like, it's actually pretty grim. Like, it's not nice to read. It feels like horror. It's not written as horror because it's like clinical and outright. And then we strapped up the whale and we chopped off the fins and this one died. And so, like, so many things that now you'd be like, it's just brutal, cruel, stupid people doing cruel, brutal, stupid stuff.
Yeah.
And every character in here is, like, Ahab is very stupid. And every character that he interacts with is stupid enough to follow the stupid person.
Yeah. So one question about the, the names.
Yeah.
Ahab.
Yeah.
It feels like I've heard this name before. Like, wasn't that a king or something in King Ahab?
Yeah.
Like, so much of the character of the names carry already baggage. Yeah?
Yeah.
So there was King Ahab.
Wait a second. I can't think of where it is, but anyway, it says here, Character Ahab is created in the influence of Samuel Taylor Coleridge, a lecture on Hamlet. Figures in biblical and classical literature such as Shakespeare and Milton, his prosthesis, for instance, has been taken as an allusion to the Oedipus myth and things like that. So, yeah, like there isn't a thing in the novel which isn't a reference to something. Like they keep meeting other ships and I'm like, is every whaling ship in the world just named after another character from the Bible?
Yeah.
Like we get to the Rachel. And I'm like, okay, Rachel Ishmael. And again, this is not worth looking up. Of course, now I typed in Rachel and...
That's difficult to search for. But yes, there was King Ahab. And I know him. I know this kind of stuff from, you know, from me and singing my music stuff. Yeah. So, yeah. He was widely criticized for causing moral decline in Israel.
Yeah. So, yeah. And then they get the Rachel. Oh, no. Rachel was the mother of Joseph and Benjamin, who were the two of the 12 progenitors of the tribes of Israel. Who was Ishmael? So that's the kind of thing that, like, if you want to, you could probably... So Ishmael was the first son of Abraham. So it's all of like this family things.
Yeah.
And I saw one of these study guides was sort of like, and what do the 9 ships that they meet mean? And I'm like, nothing. It's just somebody like taking a grab bag. Like every ship, it doesn't matter. Because actually what those ships are is a chance for our author, Herman Melville, to talk about what's the difference between whaling that's done in the UK is different from the Nantucket whaling, or how the French whalers are different from the Nantucket whalers.
Okay.
How the Greenland whalers are different, the Icelandic or wherever it is, like, you know, and how the Polynesian whalers are different and where the guys from... And it's like, nothing means anything. Like, there isn't... It doesn't... If you think it means something, that's something that's happening in your head.
Right.
That's not something that's worth... Like, it is... And again, this is me being dismissive, but I honestly think the novel is... That it failed in its own time,
yeah,
and it wasn't a success, and nobody cared about it. Lots of people said, oh, the writing's really good, and there's lots of literary allusions in it.
Yeah.
But good writing and literary allusions doesn't make you Dickens or Jules Verne or these other authors who have stood the test of time.
Yeah.
It takes someone to go, I'm not going to read this as a novel. I'm going to read it as an exercise in literary allusions.
Yeah.
And
like
writing
literary
technique.
Illusions, that's fun.
And it's great for that. If you want to just pick out all the things, I'm like, oh, I have these things. I'm like, all right, nails with a cross. Oh, I have this thing. Oh, cock crows 3 times. Oh, I have this. All right, this is Hamlet for sure.
Yeah.
You know, and here's a bit of Macbeth over here. And like, you just see it. Like, because they're like, oh, what about the irony? I'm like, you can't just retell the scene of the, it's not going to happen until the forest comes to the door, whatever it was in Macbeth or something like that. And you're like, yeah, we don't need to, just... Quit it. Like, stop it. But actually, by that time, because we're really in that end section, I'm like, great. Keep throwing to me Hamlet and Shakespeare and, you know, and Macbeth, and throw in some King Lear and Oedipus and biblical stuff. Like, yeah. I've got no problems with that.
Yeah.
What I have problems with is they set off in the ship. Mm. There's a meeting where all of the motivations of our main character are either ignored or, in the case of Ahab, set out. 90 chapters later, it picks up and we're like, all right, we're in the final stretch. We don't have time to talk about whaling anymore. And we don't have time to do like interminable meet this ship, happen this thing, catch another whale, lose this whale, do this. Have you seen Moby Dick? No, it's just this, you might as well just have a loop in the middle bit, which is setting up. That's where the weight of the book is, you know.
Yeah.
That's where the bulk of the book is. But, oh my goodness, what a shit novel, which is really well written.
I want to say something about,
yeah, dude, go for it.
Anytime you come up with a book where stuff like this happens, you keep saying the same things.
What?
Like, I can't tell you how often I've heard you, like, I have heard you sit there and say, there's nothing there. It's unbelievable how, like, it would be so funny to go through the transcripts of the previous podcast and collect out when you sat there, say, there's nothing
to me, there's nothing there for me, because I know what I'm reading is a failed novel.
Right.
You know what I mean? Mm. I can't review this as a novel.
Okay.
If I did review it as a novel, it would be a 1-star novel, because I'd be like, the pacing is really shit.
Did he write other novels?
Yeah, a few other novels.
Nothing known, though.
Yeah, yeah. There's plenty of other books by Melville. Let's have a look. Herman Melville. So let's have a look down here at his... Wow, he's got a very big... For a failed writer, he's got... So, select your biography. So you'll know Moby Dick, Redburn, Mardy, the Voyage Thither, Bartleby the Scrivener, Billy Budd, a sailor. So he's lots of like stuff.
No, not heard any of that. Sorry.
Some poetry and stuff like that. But here's the thing. He was a failed author in his time.
Okay.
I don't mind failed authors. Yeah. I don't mind failed writers. You know, yeah. Look at all of the writers. All of the painters who they suddenly find. Wait, this painting's really good.
Yeah. That's quite funny.
So you come back and find a Van Gogh, but like, I don't know. Van Gogh's very good. It's like self-evident that he was doing something which nobody else was doing at the time.
Yeah.
But each individual piece of artwork stands on its own. And this doesn't stand on its own.
Right.
This novel only stands up as, like, as I say, an exercise in writing appreciation and literature illusion. Literary illusion.
And one more question.
Yeah.
Would this material of the story, would that make a good movie? Or were the movies made, like, you know,
if you want a story about stupid people doing brutal and stupid things.
If you take out the things that are just the info dumping and, like, if you actually make it into a fun story, for example, if you take the two characters from the beginning and make them actually have a story in the book, like,
I've not seen a movie about it.
No?
Here's the thing. I think there could be a good novel or a great novel in here.
Yeah.
But you would have to have... It couldn't be Ishmael's first voyage. Yeah. It doesn't make sense.
Okay.
Because he already knows to... As soon as the ship sets off, he is no longer a first-time sailor. He's now an expert who has strong opinions about something.
Yes, I get it. Because here, like, if it is that he is writing this novel when he was old, he then has more experience and then he can just tell you all about it.
Or you could do the character, like the building of the character. But Ishmael has no impact on the story.
Right.
The only reason he survives is because he's so tangential to the action, he never impacts the story at all.
Right.
Like, the only thing he does is say to Queequeg, hey, I think we should go on this, let's go, like, you should sign up to this boat. And Queequeg is like, great, I'll come with you on that boat. Or whatever, whichever way around it goes. Like, Queequeg doesn't do anything. Mm. No character does anything.
Right.
The only character who does anything is Ahab.
Right.
And it's not interesting how he does it. He just says, we are doing this. And because they're honorable sailors, and they're not going to go against the word of their captain, they all just sail to their deaths.
Yeah.
They knowingly sail to their deaths.
Right.
Because by the time it gets to the end, it's so, like, the imagery and the thematic stuff is so ponderously saying, and these people know that this is the end, and it must be the end. And they're like, I can't die now. Why not? Because it's this. And you're like, yeah, but don't you know about dramatic irony? Forget dramatic irony. I'm going to go. Anyway, so it doesn't work. Like, the only way to make this into a good novel is to add all the stuff that Herman Melville failed to do to make it a good novel.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There could be a good novel here, but it's not up to me or screenwriters or movie makers or producers or comic book adaptation people to make this into a good novel. And looking at people's reviews of people who didn't like it, they say, oh, I actually just skipped all the chapters where all of the thematic stuff and the info dumping happened. And in the end, the story wasn't very satisfying. I'm like, yeah, no shit. Mm. The only way this is satisfying to read is by getting all of the cool chapters. Like, there's some really great, like, there's some passages where I'm like, that's really amazing. Like, what he's doing there with the imagery of, like, oh, it's like a light shining, and it's great that the people on board have the, you know, the oil, so they can always walk around the ship at night without bumping into shit or whatever it is. Like, they can always have the lamps lit.
Right.
So the most beautiful, richest place at sea or in the world is on the whaling ship because they have light. So there's this great imagery about, like, oh, there's this, like, religious stuff and other stuff, but this is the center of life. And I'm reading this, I'm going, wow, that's really good. And then it's followed up by, and then something boring, I don't know, just something boring. And I was like, oh, where was that? Why couldn't that
of really good stuff?
No, it wasn't glimpse. It was very good writing, but why couldn't that be in service of moving the plot forward, creating... Right. tension reflecting on a character that could have been a realization by Ishmael or realization by Starbuck or realization by somebody. But everything that's good, all of the good writing is removed from the characters and removed from the plot and removed from the story and put on its own time. And that's why it gets really annoying at the end. We're like, oh, here's a character that we need. I was like, that character could have been... The stuff that was there before could have been in this character's story or in their mind or in their head or in their words or in their actions.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And there's this really great bit as well where they're like, oh, if you cut a penis off a whale that's big enough, it's, you know, the penis shape. We've been to the penis museum in Reykjavik.
Huge things, like, and then big bones
and then
in
you
it.
Cut some armholes and cut the top off like that. You can wear it as a cassock, and then it's talking, it's using this like really fun religious language about a cassock. And you
what's a cassock?
Like what a priest wears.
Ah.
So imagine a priest is wearing a waterproof jacket, which is actually made out of the penis of a whale. And I'm like, this is great. Like, it's really fun. Like, it's obviously Melville heard about this or you saw this happen or whatever. And he's all like, well, I've got to put that in there. But instead of make it as a character moment or a story moment or a plot moment or any, instead of it doing the function of what a novel, it like the words in a novel should be functioning, doing something. It isn't that. It's sort of like, let's just go. But because it's all over the place, it feels really modern. You know, it doesn't feel like from 1851.
Yeah.
It actually feels like really modern or postmodern. Yeah, very postmodern, because it's sort of like, I'm writing this. It's very self-referential and it goes in these loops. And I'm like, yeah, of course. Like even like postmodern authors and things, there's a lot to dig out here.
Yeah.
But is it postmodern or is it just a shit novel? Like for its time, it was a shit novel. Yeah. It's like it was ahead of its time. It's like, no, it wasn't ahead of its time. It was so bad at its time that it was a failure. And only now we can reflect what is intentional now in like postmodern literature or whatever and storytelling. We can cast that back to its time and say...
use it as a literary exercise.
But it wasn't ahead of its time.
Yeah.
It was just shit.
Okay.
It's just
you
a
need
shit
to know,
novel.
Okay. No, I can't sit here anymore. You keep saying this is a shit novel. There's nothing.
I'm saying something can be ahead of its time and be a failure at what it was trying to be.
Yes.
It wasn't trying to be postmodern because it was 100 years too early for that.
Yeah. It was just Herman Melville. Melville's
brain fart.
That was just how he thought and how this worked. Like, because you now keep saying the same things and there's nothing more.
I just wanted to say. I've finished my notes. I've got through my notes.
Yeah.
This book. Come back to it. Why didn't I abandon it?
Yeah.
Because that was my mindset changed. Instead of, because I was being 50% of the way through, I was very disappointed at how bad of a novel it was. Because that first 25 chapters, I was like, really good novel.
Yeah.
And then it got really, really bad.
Yeah.
And then I was like, I have to read this not as a novel.
Yeah.
Like, I can't go into this. I've got to read each chapter as its own thing.
Okay.
So a chapter about whaling, I had to just enjoy it at that. A chapter about, you know, religious significance of things that are colored white. I just have to I'm just going to spend 25 minutes in this chapter and just appreciate that.
Mm-hmm.
And the bits of story, I just had to appreciate as bits of story.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't get through it as a novel. So
right.
I divorced the idea that it was a good novel or novel worth reading.
Yeah.
And just into chapters of creative writing.
Yeah.
And then I could enjoy it.
Okay.
Each bit of writing.
You adapted your expectations?
Yeah. I don't think anything more of it as a novel or even as a whaling guide, because it's quite a boring whaling guide. And I'm not really interested in all the, you know, metaphysics of it, because it's just throwing stuff against the wall in the end. It's just lots of literary references.
Right.
Just because you say the word metaphysics doesn't mean that you're adding anything to philosophy.
Yes.
You know?
So anybody on Goodreads of SFBRP friends read or reviewed or rated this book?
Moby Dick. It's got a hyphen. That people put hyphens in names. It's not Moby Dick, it's Moby Dick.
Ah.
Or The Whale.
Okay.
It was
3.54.
Felix Dance rated it 5 stars. Vincente Ribes, maybe. I don't know how to pronounce that.
It's too far away.
Oh, you can't see it. Four stars. Alexander, four stars. So quite a few four stars as well. Von Marsh. Jenny from Reading Envy, four stars. Lekashua rated it four stars. Elaine DeWitt, three stars there. Ludo, three stars. Michael, three stars. Nadia, three stars.
That's a lot of SFBRP Jason, people reading
it's
this
a classic
book.
Everyone's read it because they read it at school or whatever.
I haven't.
Maybe not. Jason, two stars. And Diva Diam, one star. I never actually finished this one and don't plan to. I was bored out of my skull. Yeah.
You get that.
Yeah. How no, that somebody the thing can... is, I also get why people give it five stars.
Yeah, okay.
I can't give this... I'm not going to rate it. Like, it's not fair for me to rate this as a novel, like I say, because in the end, I didn't read... Like, I didn't want to... You know, in the same way that, like, I'm not going to give a rating to The Odyssey or whatever.
Right.
Because it isn't...
Yes.
It isn't what this is... Like, it isn't what the science fiction book review podcast is for.
Yeah.
I don't have any problem rating a Jules Verne novel from the same period because that's sort of like at the roots of what science fiction is.
Yeah.
But this is just at the root of so many self-satisfied authors going, oh, if I put a literary reference into Moby Dick,
if
people
I call
will,
my character Ahab, we yeah, all know what that's going to mean.
Ishmael or whatever. Yeah. People will think better of what I'm writing. And I'm like, I don't play that game.
Yeah.
I don't play that game.
Yeah.
So
interesting.
Let's go down though to check this out. Community Ruse, 3.54 stars out of 5. Now remember what I say?
Yeah.
On the scale of Community Ruse on Goodreads.
Ratings.
The ratings. The community rating scale.
Yeah.
Nothing ever gets 1 stars. Nothing ever gets 5 stars. So the real scale is between, I say, 3.5 and 4.5 stars. Mm-hmm. That's the meaningful rating scale. And this is probably the lowest rated book that I've ever read. I don't think I've ever on all Goodreads book on every Goodreads review I've ever read of any book.
Really?
This is the,
okay.
probably the lowest rated book I've ever read.
Okay.
By community reviews.
Right. Well, I guess it's also lots of people like it seems to be very much either you like it or you hate it and a little bit in between.
I didn't hate this book. I didn't love the book. I enjoyed the writing and I grew to enjoy the reading experience after halfway through. Good sneeze. But the truth of it is, it's impossible to rate as a novel for
yeah.
me.
Okay.
Because it isn't a novel.
Yeah.
And if I was rating it as a novel, one star. But if I'm rating it as a Luke enjoying it as a reading experience,
yeah.
I'd probably put it at 2.5 stars.
Okay.
Because it's dragged down so much by the pacing and the tedium of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's and the really fun writing and the
doesn't
the,
quite the, get it up it, back
it,
out
it's
the
impossible.
Water.
It doesn't. And this is not to say that I don't like literary allusions and allusions to the Bible and stuff like that. I'm loving it, you know. Again, I'll read Alistair Reynolds and, you know, he has literally stories of like absolution and, you know, I got the mountain wrong, Ararat, the mountain of Ararat and,
yes.
you know, all this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Was it there's the Ark one and the, which is the one that the mountain where the Ten Commandments comes down from. Either way, I got in my review, I got the mountains mixed up. But again, it doesn't matter because the richness that the Bible and Shakespeare and other literary art, literary works can lend to something is like a bonus sprinkle on top.
Yeah.
That can't be everything.
But it just doesn't rely on it.
The characters still have to be compelling.
Yes.
The action still has to be compelling. The themes.
The story.
Everything else has to be there
yeah.
to make literary allusions and religious stuff on top. All of that has to be there as well. It can't just be the literary allusions.
Yeah.
And this book falls down. And then maybe in the next step on the chain, everyone else who puts a literary allusion to Moby Dick.
Yeah.
I think less of them as authors. I don't know.
Okay.
Who knows?
Yeah. But at least now you have the full picture of what is being referenced and why and where it comes from.
Actually, I don't, because bringing it back to Piranesi, which is referencing C.S. Lewis, who is referencing the Bible and, you know, King Arthur and all of the other crazy stuff that goes on there. Every step on the chain isn't worse or a step down or up from the previous one.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of like just somebody else playing in that space.
Yeah.
So maybe the people who reference Moby Dick, I don't think less of them, but it feels a bit easy.
Yeah, of course. All right.
That's it.
Is that it?
Yeah, I'm not giving this book a rating.
Okay.
And hope people enjoyed this discussion of Moby Dick.
What's going to come next?
Next up, I'm reading a book which was recommended to me on the SFBRP listener group on goodreads.com. Cool. Someone said, you should read I, Who Have Never Known Men by Jacqueline Harpman.
Okay.
It's a,
I've not heard of any of the, either the author.
It's a book from the 90s and I'm reading it and it is good so far.
You're listening to it.
I'm listening to it as an audiobook, yes. I spent an Audible credit on it and don't regret it at all so far. I'm enjoying it.
Good.
And we'll probably finish it up by the end of the weekend. So maybe we'll do a podcast about it next week before I go away on my next work trip on Friday. So let's see.
Right. Yeah. Let's see.
Because it's not very long. Out. Like I've only got like 3 hours left to go in it. It's
okay.
Like, it's like a 7-hour audiobook. So
maybe on Monday then.
Okay. We'll work it out.
Okay.
No hurry.
No. And it's Easter and some holidays.
Yep.
So we're both really relaxed, aren't we?
Yes. Also, Juliana's birthday tomorrow.
Oh, yes. OMG. Oh, my God. It's going to be sunny and warm.
Yeah, like 26
it's degrees
or something.
Great day. No, right, 22.
It. Oh, is it?
22
oh,
and
it's
sunny.
It's going down. The forecast is getting worse.
Really good.
All right, that's it for me. Thanks a lot for listening and I'll catch you next time.
Goodbye.
Glug, 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 glug.